I have a purpose.
Okay.
Let me ask you something. Do you make money at this little table tennis thing?
Not yet.
Do you have a job?
No.
Backhand! Backhand! Forehand!
How do you live?
Well, I live with the confidence if I believe in myself, the money will follow.
And what do you plan to do if this whole dream of yours doesn't work out?
That doesn't even enter my consciousness.
Maybe it should.
Everything in my life's falling apart, but I'm gonna figure it out.
Do you need any help? I could help you.
You wanna go hustling again?
Put your money where your mouth is.
Welcome to a Filmcast After Dark / bonus episode about Marty Supreme. I'm David Chen here with Devendra Hardwar and Jeff Cannata. This episode is just going to be all Marty Supreme, which means you should assume that we are going to spoil Marty Supreme right from the jump. If you haven't seen it, it is worth watching. Check it out. But just anyone who's afraid of spoilers, you have been warned. According to the IMDb summary of this movie, Marty Mauser, a young man with a dream no one respects, goes to hell and back in pursuit of greatness, end quote. That's what this movie's about. It's written and directed by Josh Safdie. Josh Safdie was one of the co-writers of this movie. We've already heard a lot from Jeff Cannata on the main episode about what he thought about Marty Supreme. So Devendra Hardwar, I'm really curious. Let's start with you. What did you think of this movie?
This week I saw a movie by Josh Safdie about an overconfident white guy who pursues an ambitious dream that's kind of insane to the detriment of everybody around him, especially the people of color. But enough about good times? Enough about uncut gems? I think Marty Supreme, it's
boom
perfect.
Goes boom. The dynamite. Also, Good Time is the name of the movie. And Devendra, you freaking nailed it. Thank you. Could not have done it.
It writes itself. This movie, I think it's actually, it's perfectly fine if you're going in like not seeing like what Josh Safdie have done before. Like, hey, it seems like a wide-ranging American epic about this cocky guy, and the ladies love him. He has a crazy dream. He's great at everything, even though he kind of fails at everything too. I just was not with this movie because I hated this guy.
Wow.
And it is, You can make movies about unlikable characters. Like I think some of the most compelling ones, Scorsese does it all the time. And I think the Safdies have been kind of working in that Scorsese vein. And the difference between this and like the lead in Goodfellas or something, who is doing genuinely awful things throughout it, is that, I like the characters. I like the performances more. I like the performance more. This movie just feels kind of hollow to me, just in terms of like, why is everybody falling over themselves for this dude? He's very good at ping pong. I think Jeff, when you initially talked about it, you talked about it being in like an alternate universe where ping pong was very big. No, ping pong is actually very big. And even
in
back
the
50s? Then, it was big. This movie is like partially based on a real life dude. It's not like a direct biography, but it is, or biopic, but it is like based on it. The ping pong world was kind of huge.
Devendra, you're just saying you did not find the movie's depiction of the world of ping pong to be particularly outrageous or exaggerated.
It's not that outrageous because it's kind of like, it's a very insular world of a very silly thing. It's people getting really into ping pong, and this movie kind of leans into that. And
I wouldn't say it was outrageous. I was never trying to insinuate it was outrageous.
I wouldn't
use that word
like
either.
It was just a big deal.
Like the idea that you could walk into a bar and there'd be people putting money on ping pong games just as a matter of
ping pong. Ping pong gets serious. People get serious about ping pong. I've seen
never
it real
experienced
life
that myself.
Mm. Yeah. But
I've never seen that depicted in any other medium.
But it's a weird vision of the world of ping pong. I just was not fully with this movie because I just do not like this main character at all, especially the way he uses everybody around him. And especially the way, like, despite his bad behavior, the women just keep throwing themselves at him inexplicably. I don't understand any of this. Chalamet is fine. He's doing his thing. He's doing his like really cocky, energetic thing. But this is not a quiet movie. This is a very showy movie. It wants you to be energized. It wants you to be like on this guy's side most of the time. And I just was not quite with it. So yeah, I was not a huge fan of Marty Supreme. More like Marty Mid to me.
I mean, why is everyone going after Timothée Chalamet? Because he looks like Timothée Chalamet, you know, I think is a good enough reason.
But this movie is also like, I don't know, is it the time? I guess it's a good look for him. It's particularly weird.
This is very strange, Devendra. It's very, or not very strange, but it's like, it's relatively rare for me to, for a movie of this magnitude, for me to come out more positive than you on it, you know, I think is kind of atypical.
It's entertaining,
but not, just,
it left
not
a
that
bad
much
taste in my mouth,
but yeah. Not that much more positive.
Okay.
Because I honestly think you summed it up really well in your Boom Goes the Dynamite joke at the beginning. This movie, Marty Supreme, has some of the best filmmaking of any film this year. I mean, if you liked Uncut Gems, if you liked the frenetic pace, if you liked the anxiety-inducing scenarios, the way that the Safdie brothers use background artists or you know, kind of secondary characters, casting people who you've never seen before or are complete unknowns and using them in ways
or
that are
fun cameos in this movie.
In ways that are surprising and interesting. Like I think all of those filmmaking techniques are on full display here. Basically, the movie I think is very episodic. Marty Supreme gets himself in increasingly dire scenarios in pursuit of essentially a few hundred bucks so he can travel to overseas to pursue his ping pong dream. And he also along the way alienates virtually everyone. He absorbs a lot of collateral damage or inflicts a lot of collateral damage on the way to pursuing his dreams, to the point where I think you as the viewer are meant to ask to some degree, like, how is any of this worth it at all whatsoever? And I think all of that is done very well. It's very engaging. The movie's 2.5 hours long, but it's very rarely, if ever, boring, right? It's really fun, tense, and stressful to watch. And that's a sign of a good film. And so there's many, many good things about this film. Like there's many, many reasons to recommend it. I think a lot of people will enjoy it. But at the end of the day, what is the movie trying to say, right? What is the movie's position on any of the stuff that's going on? Now, Avatar Fire and Ash is a movie, we just reviewed that this week. And Avatar Fire and Ash is a movie where I don't feel like, I think the message might be good, although it's completely lost and there barely even is a message, and there are other bad messages that the movie has. And also I don't think the movie does a good job of explaining what the messages are or making the points that it's trying to make, right? So that's my point on Avatar Fire and Ash. This movie, Marty Supreme, does do a really good job of making the point it's trying to make. And also I might just not care for it, right? I might not care for the point it's making. So if you are aligned with the point that it's making, you might be like, oh, the movie's brilliant, I love it. But if you are not aligned, or if you think it's tedious, or if you think it's redundant, or if you've heard it before, that's me basically. It's like, does that make sense for the thing I'm trying to clarify? Yeah. Is like, there's movies that in my opinion don't do a good job of even making the points they're making, and then there's movies like Marty Supreme that do a good job.
You said,
but where I don't agree with what the point is, or I don't care about what the point is, or I don't think the point should be made, or I don't think it's worth making, maybe Eddington would fall into this camp as well, right? The latter camp as well. But anyway, like this is a movie that I think does a wonderful job making the point it's making, wonderful job of like depicting this character as larger than life and a force of nature and so forth. And also, I just have very little sympathy, not only for the character, but for the theme and his the part of the narrative that this movie is trying to spin about what Marty represents. Because I think to some degree you can read Marty in this film as an avatar or as a representative of the American spirit, right? Of the American dream, lower class attempted social mobility, right? Like any number of things you could attempt to read into what the story of Marty is. And I'm not particularly sympathetic to any of those, nor am I particularly engaged with any of those messages. I don't think we need another movie about why, hey, you know, this guy has completely inflicted massive amounts of misery and suffering on everyone around him in service of his dream. But like on some level, it was kind of worth it. Which I think is kind of what
I think you've reached the wrong conclusion about this movie, in my opinion.
Yeah. That's fine. That's why we have this conversation. But yeah, I mean, I'm not saying like I didn't say it was 100% worth it, Jeff. But I think that the movie
is a movie about a piece of shit who learns to be slightly less of a piece of shit by failing.
Sort of.
Yeah, I guess. I don't know. I mean, okay, go ahead, Jeff. I mean, take it away.
What I liked about this movie, honestly, is that it is basically kind of uses the sports movie template, little cliche of how this is supposed to work. But at the end, I'm rooting against the guy. I was rooting against the guy at the end of the movie. At the ultimate showdown that every sports movie gets to, where we got to win the state tournament or whatever, you know, whatever it is, we got to get to the big game. And here it is. The whole movie has led up to this. Every other sports movie I can think of, I'm rooting for our protagonist to win. And in this movie, I was rooting for him to lose. And while he does sort of have this Pyrrhic victory,
he does win. Yeah.
Which I was sad to see.
Yeah.
Ultimately, what he learns, like you just played the clip of Gwyneth Paltrow stating the themes of this movie out. She straight up says, shouldn't you consider the fact that this all might not work out? That doesn't even enter into my consciousness, says Marty Supreme. Marty Supreme, it's called Marty Supreme. And he's cannot fathom the notion that he could care about anybody. He is a bulldozer in the world focused on a single thing, his success, and he does not achieve it. What does he actually achieve? Oh, he thinks about somebody else for a change at the end of the movie. He thinks about, he goes, oh, maybe I should step up and actually be a dad and actually care about another human being other than myself. And why does that happen? Because his dream doesn't come to fruition. The thing he refused to consider for the entire movie that was causing all this chaos for everyone around in his life turned out to be a self-delusion. And he has to reckon with that. He has to reckon with, oh, I'm the asshole. And I think that's what I liked about the movie. The movie is about a piece of shit becoming slightly less of a piece of shit because he failed.
We don't actually see him reckon.
I was going to say,
anything,
first of all, though, that's beautifully well and compellingly said, Jeff. But also, 100% agree with Devendra. I wish there had been a little bit more of
he wins. He knows, like, yes, he's not going to be in the tournament, but he wins. That's the victory for himself. It's a Pyrrhic victory. The epilogue of the movie is he goes back home and he cries in front of his baby. And maybe at that point, the magnitude of, like, all his sins are hitting him, and maybe he's thinking about being a father.
How do you read that in any other way?
But he says nothing. We just get him crying in front of the, like,
there's
no
cinema.
There's no declaration that, oh my God, this is changed. My life is being changed right now.
In my opinion, Jeff, like it is entirely possible to watch this film.
Yeah.
And get to the end of the film and then believe that in the very next moment, he's going to go back to his old life and do what he's doing.
I think you're crazy. What is a movie about? It's about a character going through an arc. What happens at the end of this movie is he has a moment of revelation. He has that moment that is the cliche about becoming a parent, where you stand there and you see the world and all of a sudden, all of your selfishness goes away because you live for someone else. And what has he done the entire movie? He's denied his paternal responsibilities. He's denied the fact that he's even he always pulls out. I always pull out. It can't be mine. He treats her like shit. Everybody in the world he treats like shit in service of his dream, which at the end of the movie, he realizes he will never attain. He gets to win one little thing to feel good about himself, mm-hmm. but he will not be the person. He's not the guy that's going to have his name on the golf balls. He's not the guy that's going to turn ping pong into an international sensation. He does not achieve his dream. What does he do? He realizes, oh, I should live for someone else. That's the fucking movie.
Jeff, I mean, listen, I hear what you're saying. I understand cinema. I am saying that's why we're here. But I also think you're reading a lot into that one.
That is my reaction to because it.
If the movie was actually doing what you said, Jeff, he would not have even gone to Japan. If the realizations that he should live for somebody else, the mother of his child was just shot. He leaves her at the hospital. He goes off to the trip. And that smash cut, like, I feel like there are many instances of how the story could have played out that could have showed that the weight of what was happening to him was kind of building at one, you know, working against him or something. It doesn't feel like he realizes much in Japan until the fact that they don't want him to be in the tournament.
He humiliates himself in Japan. That's what needs to happen for him to, he has to hit rock bottom. And the only place that can happen is in Japan. Not getting to Japan does not achieve that result. He has to be humiliated on that stage. And yes, he wins that thing. He gets that.
We did see him be humiliated already because he's being bare ass paddled by the rich dudes. But yeah.
Well, that too. Yeah. But you know, like this is. You guys are making my case for me here. I think the notion. The thing that is so surprising to me that why I'm coming off so incredulous and perhaps
let me also say Sid.
The reason that I'm coming off in this way is because it seems to me what I'm saying is the movie has an arc and a moment of revelation for this character, and your guys's take is, but maybe not. Like
it could be anything.
It could be anything.
Here's my reaction, Jeff, is that I think that the actions that he has taken literally up until the very final shot, not even 3 scenes prior to the final shot. Like I'm saying or until he gets to the hospital. How about that? But like up until that final shot, render him as a character that is so unforgivable that I find that the kind of turn that you're describing does not comport with my vision of that character.
It would be great. Yeah. It would be great if this is a full upending of his life and the way he's lived and everything. But the way the movie has been like built up is like, okay, even if he accepts the fact that this is his child and he'll try to do better by it, I don't think his dream is over. This is not a character, and everybody tells him this is not the character who's going to stop playing ping pong just because he sees
exactly
his child.
Yeah,
like, I literally don't. This makes no sense to me that you guys would see a movie, any movie, and go, the most likely outcome is that the character didn't change. Like movies are about. They're about characters changing.
But you're giving the movie credit for just being the archetype of a movie. Yes, of course.
No,
the
it
end,
shows
we,
him
we see this.
Have a moment of revelation, and then it ends. Like
yes. He has a moment of revelation, but you're going further and assuming that this is it. This is him like learning the thing.
You should listen to me. What the words that I actually used was a piece of shit who becomes slightly less of a piece of shit because he failed.
I don't know if he became slightly less of a piece of shit.
I gotta agree with Dominguez there on that one. Like maybe he didn't become slightly less of a piece of shit. I think that's kind of our reaction.
He's faced with his newborn child, Jeff. But we are all we have. He's not saying anything. He's not declaring anything beyond. It's his emotional reaction to his child being there. Maybe that is the thing. But here is the other thing that I also want to say. And is why I'm like, really, I have a hard time accepting the sort of like best case scenario for this character at the end is like, I'm just kind of tired of these stories, right? Where throughout the entire movie, we see this guy wreaking havoc throughout. Yeah, we're not supposed to be on his side. We're supposed to root against him. I get it. But also it feels like, man, have the Safdies just like carved out this niche for themselves, or Josh Safdie in particular, like, of this guy who, like, it is the same story over and over again. I just felt kind of sick of it. So by the point where, Gwyneth Paltrow decides that this piece of, sure, yeah, I'll sleep with this piece of shit. Where, you know, the woman who he abandoned is still trying to come to him for some sort of aid or with some sort of affection. It just felt like a lot. It felt like I was sick of seeing the story. And yes, I would have loved to see more of his like realization at the end of like what a piece of shit he is. But it's very for a yeah. movie that is so big and bombastic throughout the entire runtime, and then you're gonna try to give me a muted, practically silent, you know, a reflection of his emotions at the end. I don't know if I quite buy that, or at least yeah. I don't know if like it's a full revelation to him.
I'm yeah. shocked, because I feel like, Devendra, you're the guy who's always like the movie did
you
enough.
Have to earn it. You have to earn it though.
How did it? I that is what I don't understand. It's right. like the movie 100%. He puts everybody else through hell. Then he gets put through hell. He's literally spanked. He's humiliated. He's denigrated himself to this thing that isn't going to happen. And so what does he do? He comes crawling back to this other kind of life that isn't the life he ever wanted or thought he deserved. And this is a person getting their comeuppance. This is not like, oh, I'm rooting for this person. It's what's satisfying is, fuck you, dude. You don't get to treat people like this. You don't get to just by pure force of will decide you're a success. That's not how it works. You actually have to be a decent human being. And who's the guy that actually is celebrated? It's this other very humble, nice dude who, you know, like, I don't know. Clearly we saw completely different movies, but the thing that I cannot abide is the idea that the movie is telling a story about a character that doesn't change when we literally see him do something completely out of character at the end of the movie.
Like, which is kind of look at his child and be emotional.
Care
about it,
another
right?
human being.
Mm-hmm.
He cares about someone else. He cares what happens to someone else in the world for the first time. And that is when the movie ends. It's like, oh, look, he has had revelation.
Mm, yeah.
And we can.
Yeah. Yeah. It's no, sorry, Jeff. Go ahead. You're doing a great job. I guess your reading of the film is like, I think very plausible. But I guess if you show someone being a piece of shit for 2.5 hours and then he does one nice thing, I don't even know if that qualifies as him being slightly less of a piece of shit.
It's like, also he didn't, what it is. He didn't do right? any, like he dropped the girl off. He went to Japan. He right. goes back yeah. just to see the baby. Hopefully the baby's okay. Well, he didn't know there was going to be a baby, but he didn't. There is no action of his own.
He accepts responsibility. He accepts his fatherhood. He accepts denied the name. That
that's
the
one thing.
Movie.
That's the one thing he does. Mm. It's like, yes, ask for the name. And you're right.
Yeah. All right. Well, okay. So I think we've gone mm-hmm. as far as we can on this specific.
I also want to say this is a character that always says what he wants other people, what he thinks they want to believe. Right. This is a character who always puts on the face that, you know, I think he doesn't even quite know who he is. So maybe this revelation will lead to his own sort of like self-education or something, but that's kind of why I have a hard time like buying this as being like a defining moment for that character.
Well, I will say that I had so much fun along the way. Like, you know, there are movies where I don't like the character, but I'm having a blast riding along with them. I mean, I could point you guys to probably a whole bunch of movies you like that are sure. that. So I totally get, I think it's a different argument to say that this particular guy didn't work for me, but then to say the movie doesn't do anything to change the character or push the character forward or the movie's position is that you can just be a piece of shit forever and not change. Yeah. Like the movie is not saying that.
I'm not of the, like, I don't like thinking movies have specific messages like that. So I'm not saying that the movie is declaring that as a fact. I'm saying it is the year 2025. And through my over 40 years living on this planet, I've seen so many movies about this dude, right?
Right.
This white dude careening himself through society, to achieve whatever ambitions. It doesn't feel new. It feels like we just talked about Avatar Fire and Ash being, it feels like
yes.
it's just the way of water.
But this is the anti-that. What you just described, the movie is trying to be the anti-that.
So many of those movies end with those dudes having some sense of catharsis. Like that is the archetype for a lot of these movies.
I think it's
something.
It's comeuppance. It's look,
Uncut Gems.
He doesn't get away with it. He doesn't get away with it.
Uncut Gems. Goodfellas.
I mean, like so many of these. To me, the big comparison for the end of this film is Whiplash. You know, sure. spoilers for the end of Whiplash. Yes. But
there you go.
And first of all, Whiplash is by the way, Whiplash, a movie I love. I'm a huge fan of Whiplash. Yep. And at the very end of Whiplash, there's many ways of interpreting what happens at the end of Whiplash. So, like, my interpretation is not the only one that exists, but the idea is that Miles Teller's character fucks over J.K. Simmons' character by like reporting him to the authority and like gets J.K. Simmons fired from his job. And then J.K. Simmons invites Miles Teller to come play with him in a band, but mm-hmm. he does it to humiliate Miles Teller's character. And it does
this
not
give
him
the right. This is after Miles Teller's character also has accepted like he will never be great.
Right.
He has accepted I'm going to live a normal life from now on.
And he gives Miles Teller the wrong music. And then so they start playing and then Miles Teller can't do it. And it's very humiliating. And he's on stage and he walks off the stage and then he's in embarrassment and shame because he doesn't know the music. And J.K. Simmons is like, haha, I won. And then Miles Teller is like, you know what? Fuck that guy. He walks back onto the stage and then plays his heart out in this massive drum solo that's spectacular. And J.K. Simmons even starts to respect him. And at the end of the day, it's like he did it for him. Miles Teller did it for himself. It doesn't matter what J.K. Simmons is thinking. Like he did it for himself. He needed to earn for himself. Like he needed to prove to himself that he could do it. And to me, the ending of Whiplash is very similar to the end of this movie where he's like, hey, I've accepted that I am not going to enter this championship this year. I've accepted that, this trip to Japan is lost. But I need to prove to myself that I can beat this guy. And he plays this completely inconsequential game that no one really cares that much about. But for him, it's like, I'm proving to myself that I can do this. You know, I don't know, Jeff. I do see it as like a very triumphant moment for that character. And maybe you don't. Maybe you're like, no, actually, it's horrible for him. But like the movie is saying like, hey, maybe it's bittersweet, right? Like he's not going to get the championship, but he still at least knows that he himself is good deep down.
Well, I'll tell you, I was hoping he would lose. And the fact that he didn't lose, I was a little bummed. But I do think... My recollection, I've seen this movie over a month ago now, so maybe I'm misremembering the detail of it. But my recollection is that the faces of the people in the crowd are not. It is as pyrrhic a victory as it gets. Mm-hmm. He has done this thing because he knew he could do it, and he did it by one little half of a point. But ultimately, what you're describing ignores the entire last beat of the movie, which is then he comes crawling back to the person he told to fuck off and accepts something that he had denied the whole movie. And like, I think that the reality of taking that responsibility will invalidate any kind of future attempt at what he's like. He has faced a reckoning. That's my take.
Yeah. Again, I think it's a very good reading of the film, Jeff. I think I'm trying to kind of like figure out why it doesn't resonate with me, right? And I do think it's because of how toxic this character has been this whole movie. You're like, he's become slightly less of a piece of shit. I think it's a good way of describing it, but it's like, I don't believe at the end of the movie, I'm not left believing that any responsibility he takes will be in any way meaningful. Like that's just where I am at the end of the movie. Like emotionally,
I mean, that's fair, but you know? I think
I can kind of agree with you that maybe that's what the movie's trying to do. And if so, I found it unconvincing. You know what I mean?
This is a movie like Wolf of Wall Street or it is hanging out with a despicable person and watching their downfall, watching their hubris and their, you know, their lack of self-awareness be, you know, lead to their comeuppance.
Let me ask you a question that is unanswerable. Okay, but I bet all of us have an answer we feel like in our heart. Okay, do you think Wolf of Wall Street inspired more people or warned more people off of that life?
Well, I don't think that's relevant. I mean, it's a fair question to ask, and I worry that it inspired more people.
That's what I'm saying. Is like,
but I don't think that's the movie's responsibility to worry about.
I don't think it's the movie's responsibility either, Jeff. I'm not saying like Martin Scorsese should be ashamed of himself or anything, but I am saying that we can kind of judge movies in that way, right? Like,
because
Wolf of Wall Street inspired more people than it discouraged, I don't think it accomplished what it was trying to accomplish. Like, do we not think that Wolf of Wall Street is meant to be a cautionary tale of some kind?
100%. And a lot of people read it that way. The people that didn't are stupid. And the movie can't be responsible for their stupidity. The Catcher of the Rye isn't responsible for murders.
I didn't use the word responsible at any point, but I can say ineffective.
If 60%, 70%, 80% of an audience misses a movie, misses the point of the movie, I don't hold that at the movie's feet. I don't say then you have failed as a filmmaker because the unwashed masses are missing the point of your movie.
Yeah,
I think create a piece of art that's sophisticated and we're not talking about Marty Supreme necessarily right now. I'm talking in the abstract. You can make a movie that's sophisticated and that appeals to the wisest among its audience. And then if a lot of people miss the point, that's on them.
Well, I'm increasingly unsympathetic with that point of view in general, first of all. But secondly, I think... why did I bring that up? I guess because like, I think I was trying to draw a contrast between what a movie is trying to accomplish versus like the actual impact of the tonnage of what the movie has done, if that makes sense, right? Like that there's if the movie is intending to do what you're saying, right? But then on the one hand, the movie is intending to do what you're saying. On the other hand, 99% of the runtime is Marty Supreme being a piece of shit, right? And so it's like, it's really hard for me to then have that moment of like, oh, so maybe he's slightly less of a piece of shit if like literally the overwhelming message or sorry, not message, but like material in the movie supports this point of view.
I mean, I think most of the people who watch Scarface or The Sopranos would, it would be the same description that you're—
Absolutely. And David Chase got into an antagonistic relationship with his viewers because of it. Like,
right.
People like Tony Soprano fine. Too much, you know,
that's fine.
And he was I need to remind you guys why Tony Soprano is a huge piece of shit. Mm-hmm. And he actually took steps to do that. Now, you can't do that. You cannot do that in movies
exactly.
Because a movie is just a one and done thing.
Right.
But at least I think he recognized that. And, you know, I don't know that I see that recognition in this case. Right. But you're right. Like,
I would be surprised if you interviewed the Safdies and ask them if this was supposed to be a character to look up to. I don't think I think Marty Supreme is a title that is ironic.
No point did I say he's a character that you should look up to, nor do I believe that. I'm just saying your reading of the film in which that there's this big redemptive moment at the end for him reads to me as emotionally false or hollow. Like, That moment read to me as very emotionally false or hollow, given everything we know about that character leading up to that point. So I'm not saying you should look up to him. I'm not saying the movie wants you to root for him, although it does at some points. And it uses the language of sports movies, you know, in that way sometimes. But like, that's not my main issues with the movie.
I think a good ending to compare this to, by the way, is Anora, which ends... On a similar,
so we're going to spoil Anora.
Yeah,
we're going to spoil Anora. Okay, go ahead, Divinity.
But ends on a similar sort of like, it's a crying breakdown of the character dealing with everything that came before. But yeah, that character, she's not a role model. She's not somebody, you know. That's not the message of that movie. It's her like dealing with the weight of everything that happened. But it felt more believable throughout. Yeah. Like to me, that character felt. Like I understood what is happening there, even if it felt a little like quizzical at the beginning, like when I first saw that movie. Whereas this one, I'm like, yeah, I don't know, man. Did you really learn a lesson? Did you really learn anything here? Because you didn't get to play the tournament, but you still won. You still won in Japan
100%
for yourself.
And
yeah.
Devendra and I are like having a freaking Vulcan mind meld this episode, because the Anora example is great, because mm-hmm. like my interpretation of that ending is that character at the end of Anora is dealing with like the sheer madness of everything that's happened in the preceding, you know, 24 or 48 hours or whatever. And you could that was my initial reading of what Chalamet's character was dealing with at the end of this movie, right? It was not like, oh, I've had this thought about being another person, but like that guy has been through a lot in the last 2 to 3 weeks, right? And like mm-hmm. he could be thinking about all of that, any of that, right? And not, oh, I need to rededicate myself to the furtherance of another human life now. Yeah. And I
feel like you it feels crazy to me that the movie is telling you is look, he's looking at a baby that is his. He has accepted it as his, except the whole movie he said it wasn't, and now he accepts that it's his. That's a change.
I get the steps. It is a change. You are correct. Let's just say there are different shoes watching this movie, Jeff. And as we see this guy wreak havoc throughout, I didn't find it fun, actually. Like, there are some of the scenarios are, oh, man, that tub. I didn't expect that tub to fall through the floor. But
that was wild.
That was wild. I did. Yeah. I couldn't help but think about, like, I couldn't just sit back and enjoy it, because I'm like, my God, this guy, it's not just like the people around him, but it's also like, especially the people of color around him.
Yeah. You know,
just kind of ruined because
here's
of
a good
guy.
Analogy. Here's a good analogy. Yeah. You know how, like, I remember you talking about how, like, you couldn't really enjoy the John Wick movies after like a shooting had occurred. Right, like, do you remember that?
Yeah, but I think you're misinterpreting what I mean by enjoying the ride with this guy.
Okay, fair. Yeah,
let's clarify that. Yay, I get to watch this guy ruin lives. I am watching this movie. And I mean this 100% honestly. I am watching this movie through the eyes of all the people that he's messing with.
Uh huh.
And like, there is nothing about this character I relate to. Mm-hmm. I don't relate to him. I'm not looking at the world through his eyes. I'm watching him bash into things like a bulldozer, the word I used earlier. And I'm relating to all the people, like the kid who, you know, who's made the ping pong balls, and the fucking the other guy whose taxi cab he destroys, and the, you know, like all of that stuff. Those are the people. Those are the people that are interesting to me. And this wrecking ball is going through their lives. And finally, at the end, you get to see him have to reckon with some of the shit that some of the harm. And then the very first thing that happens in the movie, what happens before the credits? We watch sperm impregnate an egg.
Well, we all
what
we
happens
watch it
at the, through the middle of the movie. He says, "It's not my sperm who impregnated the egg." What happens at the end of the movie? He finally admits that it's his kid. I don't know how much more
that's
obvious
like,
it could be.
That's one message, Jeff. That is like 5 minutes of dedicated time in this journey, in this movie.
Yes, and you
right?
see all it's the not, other shit. Oh, okay, sorry, interrupted you. Go
that's
ahead.
That's what I'm saying, though. Like, it is it puts a very emotional, you know, punctuation point on this film. Ah, he has learned something. I disagree.
Okay.
Maybe
he's saying he's learned something. I'm saying that he.
I think you are, but yeah.
He got beaten down. He lost. The thing that Marty Supreme, he ain't.
Maybe
here's a question. Here's a question. You know, you talked about like, I'm going to try to find a different angle on this, okay? Because I think this conversation is getting a little repetitive. But you talked about, Jeff, like you're trying to see Marty's actions from like other people's eyes, right?
I'm not trying to. That's how I've watched the movie, is you watch all the people he bashes into who are decent.
Sure.
Some of them not. Some of them less so. But you watch all the decent people and you watch the havoc that he's – I mean, there's tons of movies like this where you
A, agree that there's tons of movies like this, and B – I agree. There's tons of movies like this, which is a point that Devendra has made. Like, we've seen a lot of movies like this.
Yeah,
but then B, can you understand why A, having seen a lot of movies like this, B, having seen real world parallels of the same, why this might be, this particular instance might be tiresome to view.
Yes, but that's a different point than your.
It's a different point. I'm not going to argue said,
your. I literally being said tired I'm trying to find a
different
not.
Slice of this conversation. You know, like go ahead.
Listen, I have not argued against your dislike of this character or being tired of this story at okay, any great. Point.
So you don't have any.
That's not a. That's not a point of contention among us. Oh, okay. You guys are saying the movie didn't do something that I think it is undeniably doing. That is the only thing that I've taken exception okay. to.
All right.
Is
well,
that you guys are like, well, at the end, he probably didn't change. And I'm like, what? That's what this whole
thing is. I think you're getting a little fixated on that point. The movie is trying to say, yes, he has changed. I'm saying that is not enough. I'm saying do something more. The fact that that character even won in Japan after losing, yes, after losing everything, but he got that Pyrrhic victory for himself. Oh, you wanted him to lose too, because maybe thematically it would have made more sense for this. You want to hit rock bottom. You don't win against the rival. You don't win, you know, and yeah. then you go back home.
Yeah. But Jeff also doesn't like that as well. Right. But okay, guys.
So,
guys okay.
Wait, I got to say one more thing because we cannot stop talking about this movie without what I would consider to be the craziest line of dialogue I've heard in 2025.
And what is that?
I'm a vampire. I don't know if it landed on you guys the same. I mean, clearly
it didn't.
Like, I was like, what movie are we in right now?
Can you explain the context and character of?
Do you not remember this? That line?
I don't recall it.
Oh my gosh.
Then I remember somebody saying, but yeah, what was the thing?
The dude, the Gwyneth Paltrow's awful husband.
Oh yes, yes.
At
yes,
the
yes.
end of the movie is like.
Oh, right. Yeah, says, yeah. Oh, that you're right. That was so good. You're right, Jeff. That was awesome. He's like, I've seen like 50 Marty Supremes.
Vampire.
Right? Like,
yes.
Yeah, yeah, that was so
I've
good.
I've lived for 200 years.
Yeah.
Like, the fuck? I was like, "Whoa! That is the craziest line of dialogue I think of
that was
of all
amazing."
Year.
I thought he was speaking metaphorically, but yes, I yeah. think.
Well, there was a moment where I was like, "Is he though? What movie are we in?
Sinners?
Sinners? Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. No. So what I was going to say is, hey, we've been talking for like 35-40 minutes about this one point in the movie that we disagree on. But let's talk about some other stuff that happened in the film, okay? So first of all, I want to say most shocking Penn Jillette cameo ever. And yeah, I actually...
Talk about cast against type, huh?
I actually thought the way that whole played out with them like ramming the car into the porch was like really incredible. The movie looks like it costs like $200 million, by the way, right? Mm-hmm. Like,
yeah. Just the idea of setting it period is like...
Right.
You just raised the budget... astronomically, and I don't know how much we got out of that. And I love how it's a period movie in the 50s and all the music is from the 80s. That's crazy.
Yeah, and not only that, there's like many shots that happen that don't even need to be period, like the shot of him at the phone booth, right? There's yeah. a shot of him at the phone booth where mm-hmm. he's talking the phone, and then he leaves the phone booth, and then you see he's in a used car lot. And it's like, they must have spent like $1 million on this one shot just for him to be like, why did you did not need to do it? Could have just all been done in close up, but they're like, hey, we're going to really luxuriate in the period setting. Yes. The bathtub falling, that was probably the most shocking thing, right? Of like, you kind of see it coming, but the bathtub falls. And then, the whole thing with the dog and you know, one of the things, you know, the movie does have an undeniable kind of frenetic energy of one mm-hmm. thing leading to the next. And you do also get a sense of like, what are we even doing here at this? You know, like we're going to set up this dog meetup with this woman. Like, yeah. And we're so far off the ping pong mission at this point, you know, but yeah. I didn't necessarily mind that, you know, it's just kind of, it's just a characteristic of the movie that you're like yeah. going down this extremely winding path. So
the ping pong work, by the way, is good.
Very good.
I heard Chalamet trained a lot for that. Ping pong is hard. This is a game I've never really
effects,
been able to.
Yeah. Very, yeah. very convincing. Visual yeah. effects, I think.
Visual effects.
Yeah.
But they probably did the same thing that they did with Forrest Gump, right? Where like mm-hmm. they do the movements and then they put the ball in afterwards is my guess, right? Yeah. But you know, on that note, they did a good job of making the ping pong matches thrilling, right? Like yeah. I thought like, oh, this is actually, I can understand why this is once the biggest sport in the world, right? And so, yeah. Anything else that you guys want to point out that's notable about the
I'm
film?
I'm sad you guys hated this because I just thought it was
I didn't hate it, bizarre.
Jeff,
I'm just saying I am sick of this kind of thing.
Yeah.
That's basically what I am saying.
Yes.
And maybe it could have been any movie that kind of pushed me over this. But it's also like, I've sat through a lot of Safdie movies where you're just doing this. Ah, he grew up really loving Scorsese movies, huh? Give me another tempo. Like, what else you got? Because it also kind of feels like they're at least kind of like retreading Scorsese highlights with this stuff. It's energetic. It's entertaining to a certain degree. If he can stomach these characters, I do want to shout out Odessa Azian as the sort of like paramour. Apparently, Pamela Adlon's daughter.
Yeah.
Good. Wow. God, good. She's doing like the press tour right now. So there are pictures of her all around in TikToks. Stunning, incredible. Hot Bobby Hill has a very attractive daughter, apparently multiple ones, but she is fantastic. I wish we got to know more about what was going on with him and his mother, because Fran Drescher, I'd like to see more of her in movies, and like clearly there's something there. What is going on there? I wonder if it's a disservice to start with this movie at the point where he's already a very good player and like already high up in the tournament. It doesn't feel like we're getting much of the journey, I guess. I don't know. Like some of it just felt like we're being told how great he is. He's a great shoe salesman. He is a great player. He's the best in the world, apparently.
There's something you said, Devendra, that I wanted to jump off of, but I don't recall. But yes, I do think I do think like Fran Drescher is underused, and I do think, you know, his girlfriend character is a little underused as well. I think the movie is really kind of obsessed with these little setups of, hey, here's how this situation goes horribly wrong. Like virtually every scene is like, he has a plan and then it goes horribly wrong in some way. And yeah, Devendra, I'm right there with you about being tired of these kinds of movies. Spoilers for Uncut Gems. But I think one thing that I think this movie has a lot in common with Uncut Gems, and also to some degree Good Time, right, is these characters who are exclusively white men are reaching for something, right? There's something that they are aspiring to. And Uncut Gems is represented by this stone that like held the powers of the universe inside. And here it's kind of this ping pong ball that becomes a sperm in the opening credits of the movie. And that this character is like going for something that is like, transcends himself, right? In both movies. And in both movies, they end up destroying a lot of people's lives around them. And in Uncut Gems, it ends up killing them. And that to me feels like a much more, I don't know, realistic, satisfying way of ending that story than the ending we got here. You know, and I guess part of that is probably my biases, Jeff, right? And part of it is, you know, maybe part of it is not my biases. I don't know. So I wanted to acknowledge kind of that similarity between the movies. Okay. I think the comments are going to be on Jeff's side on this one. I'm just going to put that out there. But
I mean, everybody loves this movie. It's widely well rated. Rotten Devendra, Tomatoes
you
loves
and me,
it.
Yeah, holding down the hey, we don't need these. this is boring. Trained very very defensible position on this one. Okay. Anyway, those are some thoughts on Marty Supreme. And next week is our top 10 episode of 2025. Thank you so much for listening. Thank you so much for your support. If you're a patron at patreon.com/filmpodcast, they are Devendra Hardwar and Jeff Cannata. I'm David Chen. We'll see you later. Goodbye.